All right, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I'm your host, Aaron Freeman, and today I am continuing our year-end roster review, taking a look back at the 2018 season and focusing on the Atlanta Falcons tight end position.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, guys, you know me. I'm Aaron Freeman. I'm founder of FalcFans.com. I'm on Twitter at FalcFans. And of course, I am the host of this illustrious Locked On Falcons podcast. Today, we're continuing our year-end roster review series. We're picking up where we left off last Friday with our Locked On Fullbacks podcast. Now we're moving on to the tight end position. I know probably many of you are like, what wide receiver is supposed to come after tight end, after fullback? No, I'm doing tight ends because it's just basically a little bit easier of a subject to talk about because I basically have to talk about three players as opposed to like six. So, you know, I just like, hey, this is easier to talk about. So we'll talk about tight end position. And because one of the things that we will talk about today is sort of continuing on what we talked about last Friday on the fullback episode and sort of focusing in on the identity, because I think that's a big part of sort of, you know, the direction that the Falcons are going to make at some of these key skill positions in 2019. So just piggybacking a little bit off of what we talked about then. So let's jump right into it. Let's talk about, you know, the obvious at the tight end position, and that's Austin Hooper. And, you know, he's coming off of a Pro Bowl year. He sort of got elevated to the Pro Bowl as an alternate due to, you know, whoever, someone ducking out. I don't care about the Pro Bowl, so I don't know the answer to that. I could have spent 5 minutes Googling it, but I'm not going to do that. I got to keep my rep going as someone who does not care at all about the Pro Bowl. So it's even, you know, spending that amount of time to do that amount of research is I'm above it. With Austin Hooper, he did have an improved season. At times, I sort of think that his improvement has been exaggerated by folks. And I think a lot of it has to do with sort of, you know, the big complaint that people had about his quote unquote disappointing season last season with the drops. And if you listen to this podcast throughout the 2017 season and shortly thereafter, when I constantly talked about sort of the bad rap that I think Austin Hooper got last year because of the drops. And again, for those of you that don't know, I am a bishop in the church of drops are overrated. So that's part of the reason why I think the way that I think. But it's no doubt that Austin Hooper was a better player. He was much more sure-handed this year. But I think, you know, somewhat a little bit, you know, people sort of boiling it down to one of the reasons why Austin Hooper had such a spike in production in 2018 versus 2017 was due to the fact that he hung on to the football a lot more. I think is a little bit over-exaggerated. You know, he had 6 drops last year versus 2 this year. Now, when you look at the percentage of targets, it's more significant than just 4 passes. But, you know, it's not that much more significant. It's like it means like 6 passes that, you know, if he had dropped footballs at the same rate last year, he probably would have had like 7 drops as opposed to 2. So it's one of those things where I do think the fact that he caught 18 more passes this year isn't simply because of, you know, a half dozen or so plays where he did not drop the football. And I think the main reason, and I've talked about this previously on the podcast, but the main reason why I think Austin Hooper had a significant spike in production this year was it was how he was used. And primarily, a lot of his production came from being utilized a lot more in the short game of the Falcons passing attack, where you saw a lot more of his targets being underneath throws that traveled less than 10 yards in the air. And that's a big reason why his yards per reception dropped from 10.3 to 9.3 this season, because he got a lot more short passes. And I think one of the things that's interesting is that when you look at some of these games like Pittsburgh and the first Tampa Bay game and the Cleveland game, where in all three of those games he had 10 or more targets, a lot of them were short passes. Like, you know, in those three games, he combined for 32 targets, and 25 of those were passes that didn't go more than 10 yards in the air. And what's interesting about that is, you know, in sort of as another illustration of his improvement in terms of production, is that if you took his top three games in overall targets from 2017, the you know, his three best games totaled only 21 targets. And just in his three best games this year, just only looking at the short throws, he had 25 targets alone. So that's one of the reasons why I think that's what the bigger part. And, you know, what's interesting about those three games in particular is sort of, particularly when you look at some of the early, the first half of those games, because that's in a lot of them, particularly Pittsburgh and Tampa Bay, a lot of Hooper's targets came in the first half of those games. And in those games in particular, they were games where the Falcons did not run the ball at all. Like, I think in both of those games, looking only at their first half plays, only about less than 30% of their called plays were run plays in that game. And as you know, one of the bigger issues that I've talked about over the last couple of weeks, and one of the reasons why I think, at least I would argue the biggest reason why Sark got fired, is because the Falcons lacked the sort of balance that Dan Quinn was looking for. But I think in a lot of ways, Hooper's ability to sort of catch these shorter throws sort of supplemented and replaced the running game. And in those games, I think sort of really illustrates that point. And I think, you know, despite saying like, oh, Sark got fired because, he didn't run the ball enough, I don't say that as like a criticism of Sark, because I think I would argue that throwing, you know, a 6 to 8 yard pass to Hooper is better than running the football with Tevin Coleman or Ito Smith and only gaining 3 or 4 yards. So I don't blame Sark for that. I just think, you know, maybe Dan Quinn does. But so I think in a lot of ways, getting to the point that I want to make is when we look ahead to 2019, I do wonder a little bit if we do or more of this sort of balanced, you know, establish the run hashtag physical type of offense under Dirk Koetter, and sort of what Dan Quinn seems to be saying that he wants this team to get back to. One does wonder that will that directly affect a guy like Hooper, because at least I can make the argument, at least I would make the argument, that one of the reasons why Hooper saw such an increase in production was in large part, or at least somewhat, due to the fact that the Falcons didn't run the football this year. And if they run the football more, does that lead to less targets for Austin Hooper in 2019? We'll have to see. You know, I don't have an answer to that, but that will be something I'll be looking forward to. So if we begin to hear, as we have the last couple of off seasons, sort of the Hooper, you know, breakout year hype train, and people saying like, oh, Austin Hooper's gotten better in each of the 3 years he's been in the league, I see no reason why he won't even be even better in 2019 with more production, because it's just, you know, this linear curve upwards or whatever. I tend to be a little bit skeptical of that for that very reason I just outlined. So I'm curious to see what Hooper, but no doubt about it, I've been a strong supporter of Austin Hooper. I think he's a solid player, solid blocker, underrated blocker by a lot of people, and a reliable option in the air. And it was nice to sort of see him get more opportunities on third and fourth downs this year, and also in the red zone as well. And I think, you know, even if he doesn't necessarily, you know, see more targets in 2019 than he did last year, and it's a little bit of a drop off, then I hope that at least a higher percentage of those targets could be red zone targets, and still allow him to sort of shine on sort of those critical downs and be more of a reliable chain mover, so that at least a higher percentage of his targets this year, even if they're lower overall, are sort of in these critical situations. And I think he's capable of fulfilling those needs. So that'll be the thing I'm looking forward to with Austin Hooper. We'll talk about sort of the backups, Logan Paulson and Eric Sauber, in a bit as we move forward on today's episode. But I know many of you guys are listening to this podcast wondering when I am going to share sort of my insights into the big game that's happening this upcoming weekend, particularly who I think is going to win. But you guys know I don't really know who is going to win. But if you think you know, you better call somebody, and you know who you should call. Yeah, my bookie. Remember, who you're betting on is just as important as who you're betting with, and that's why I always tell people to go to my bookie. Trust me, they're the best bet you'll make this season. They've been in business for years. They have great reviews online. Their mobile site is very easy to use. Lay down some cash and win big today. There's in-game live betting, the most rewarding player perks in the business. And for all you fantasy guys and gals out there, you can bet the over and under on how many fantasy points you think a player will score. each game, including this weekend. So join now, and MyBookie will match your deposit dollar for dollar. Use the promo code LOCKEDON to activate that offer. Visit MyBookie online today. That's MyBookie. And don't forget to use the promo code LOCKEDON when creating your account to claim your bonus. You play, you win, you get paid. So let's talk about Logan Paulson and Eric Saubert, the two backup tight ends. And we'll focus first on Logan Paulson. I think Paulson's primary value for the Falcons offense was obviously as a blocking tight end. I think he was up and down in that regard. There were times when he was really good as a blocker, and there were times where he was really struggling as a blocker. And I think you can make a case that, you know, some of the team's run struggles this year were somewhat due to that inconsistency, not to necessarily blame the issues running the football solely on Logan Paulson, but sort of having those ups and downs, I think, proved to make it so that the Falcons couldn't rely on the running game as much. One of the things you will say positive about Logan Paulson, particularly relative to what his production was in San Francisco and Chicago in previous stints, was that he saw increased production in the passing game. And at least it seemed to me, and I'd have to really take a deep dive on my notes and whatnot and really go back through the film, which I'm not going to do. But it seemed like the vast majority of his production in the passing game came off the play action rollouts and the bootlegs, where the Falcons were sort of designing a throw down the field, but for various reasons, whether it was pressure or just the play never developed fully, that, you know, Matt Ryan was sort of just essentially check it down to Logan Paulson, and he got a lot of production in that way. And at times it was very valuable production, because there were a number of times where he would basically turn that up into a decent game and move the chains for the Falcons, and had a couple of red zone targets that really helped the Falcons out in some sticky spots as well. So, I think overall Paulson, you know, proved his value, that if the Falcons do decide to resign him, I wouldn't have a problem with that. I think he has a role on this team. I don't, you know, we'll talk a little bit later about whether the Falcons need to upgrade that spot. But I certainly think Paulson, you know, adds value as a blocker, adds a little bit, you know, a teensy weensy value as a receiver. I think the Falcons could do a lot better than Logan Paulson, but I also think they could do a lot worse. And so I think ultimately, if the Falcons do decide to bring him back, price is going to matter. If they can get him on a similar sort of 1 year veteran minimum deal, then I don't see any reason why you wouldn't try to bring him back, unless you're sort of intent on making a significant move there, whether that's in the free agency or the draft to upgrade that spot. I don't think, you know, moving on to Eric Saubert, I don't really see Eric Saubert as an upgrade, as an in-house candidate to upgrade. It's not necessarily that I think Saubert's bad. It's just, he didn't show enough gains in my eyes that I really sort of feel confident that he's going to be, you know, that's a lateral move, in the sense if the Falcons decide to move on from Logan Paulson. He just wasn't a reliable enough blocker in my eyes to be trusted to handle that number two role. Maybe he makes a leap this year. I would be skeptical of that, but, you know, you never know what's going to happen. Particularly when you look at sort of how Cutter and Sarkisian have typically used those multi-tight end sets, like in comparison to, say, Shanahan, who oftentimes, and particularly in 2016, would basically have perfect balance in terms of, you know, when they use two tight ends, Shanahan ran and threw the ball, you know, on a perfect balance 50% of the time that year. But, like, when you look at Cutter's offenses in 2016 and 2017 in Tampa Bay, it was like 60% of the time they would run the football in those two tight end sets. You saw about 60% run rate with Sark's offense in 2017 as well in those two tight end sets. And that number sort of fell to 50% in 2018. And that's not an indicator that the Falcons had perfect balance. It's just when you see it relative to the fact that the Falcons ran the ball like a league minimum of like 35% of the time on most of their plays, the fact that they were running the ball 50% of the time on their two tight end sets is another, again, an indicator of how run heavy they were in those situations. So basically the point I'm trying to make is that if you're going to be the number two tight end, in Cutter and or Sark's offense that, you know, being a reliable blocker is sort of a must there. And that's one of the reasons why I think Paulson is better suited for that, even though I just said that his blocking wasn't as reliable, but I think it's a lot more reliable than Saubert showed last year. You know, the thing I'll say about Saubert is I like his athleticism. I like his ability as a receiver. But right now, I think he's sort of more destined to be a third tight end, a TE3, as opposed to a long-term TE2. That doesn't mean I'm necessarily closing the door on him continuing to improve and develop in the future in that regard. But, you know, I think he'll have to make some significant games before I'm willing to sort of factor that into my future moves. Basically, and we'll come back and talk a little bit about this, but basically, like, he's not going to stop me from feeling like upgrading the tight end position is a need moving forward. It's either Logan Paulson or somebody new in my eyes to be the Falcons' second tight end in 2019, or not necessarily Eric Saubert. So we'll talk sort of a little bit about the whether or not the Falcons should or could upgrade the tight end position when we come back. But in the meantime, I do want to let you guys know about the two podcasts devoted to the draft on the Locked On Podcast Network. They are Locked On NFL Draft Podcast with hosts John Ledger and Trevor Sikkema. They are the Draft Dudes Podcast with hosts Joe Marino and Kyle Krabs. You can find them both wherever you get your Locked On podcasts, as well as at thedraftnetwork.com, where you can get those guys written content, as well as several others about all things draft, including their thoughts, their firsthand thoughts on who stood out in the Shrine Game week of practice, who stood out in the Senior Bowl week of practice. Again, that's thedraftnetwork.com, your team every day. Piggybacking on what we talked about in last episode, or at least Friday's episode, as far as the fullback position goes, and sort of spent the last third of that podcast really talking about sort of identity issues that the Falcons had. And, I'll continue that conversation again with the tight end position, because I do think these two positions are related. Like, if you decide to dial back your fullback usage, it makes a lot of sense. And the conventional wisdom is that means you're going to dial up your tight end usage for most NFL offenses, because most NFL offenses, like, you know, this league is primarily a three wide receiver league that primarily runs the majority of their offensive plays, because it's a passing league, out of that 11 personnel, which is that three wide receiver set. But most teams, you know, run some version of a quote unquote run formation, which for most teams is typically a formation that features a fullback, which is 21 personnel, or a formation that features two tight ends, which is 12 personnel. So, I think you can make a pretty strong case of why it's valuable to run more two tight end sets in today's NFL, particularly when you look at sort of the league-wide production, particularly when you compare, that 12 personnel versus 11 personnel. In the two tight end sets last year, in that 12 personnel, quarterbacks or league-wide passer ratings were up 10 points. Success rate was up 6%. Yards per attempt was up 1 yard comparatively, and quarterbacks were sacked less, about one, difference between being sacked on 7% of their dropbacks in 11 personnel versus 6% of their dropbacks in 12 personnel. So, what that's telling you is the stats are at least saying that, passing the football out of 12 personnel is better, at least on average across the league, than it is in a what you would assume would be better, which is what teams mostly utilize, the throw of the football, which is those three wide receiver sets out of that 11 personnel. Now, the way I would argue why that is I think, and I don't have the data necessarily to confirm this, but my suspicion is that oftentimes teams tend to run a lot more play action. That sort of explains why there's a larger yards per attempt, which is you're getting more plays down the field, you're doing more play action, so defenders aren't necessarily pinning their ears back as they often do in those three wide receiver sets. And so you're not giving up as many sacks. And so because you're getting more, big plays down the field, you're also seeing a bigger boost sort of in the passer rating as well. So I think that's one of the reasons why those numbers sort of reflect it. So Basically, I explained that like there's at least, you know, statistically a reason why you would want to be more of a two tight end oriented offense, like we see with teams like Baltimore, like we see with teams like Philadelphia, like Tampa Bay has been the last couple of years with O.J. Howard and Cameron Brate, like we used to see with the Patriots. They weren't necessarily that in this current season, but in the previous years, you know, with Gronk and others, Dwayne Allen and Martellus Bennett and all those guys, why they sort of centered their offense around two tight ends. The other argument, at least specifically to the Falcons, that I would make in the case of why you would want to adopt more two tight end looks in your offense as sort of your primary quote unquote run based formation, is that I think, you know, you can make the case that it would also help the Falcons with pass protection, you know, particularly if the Falcons have a new face at right tackle that maybe is a little green if he's a rookie, or just may be a little bit questionable if he's a free agent pickup, or even if you decide to retain Ryan Schrader and you're like, I don't know if Schrader's going to have it in him, you know, having another tight end on the field, you know, more often that can help chip in those situations and slow down those edge rushers from pinning their ears back. You know, makes a lot of sense in that regard. So that's one of the reasons why I think you can make a strong case for why, you know, dialing up more two tight end looks this year and sort of mimicking what the Bucs had the last couple of years with guys like Howard and Brate makes a lot of sense. You know, what's interesting about it is that, you know, teams, again, league-wide tend to throw the ball, you know, obviously in those 11 personnel groupings, versus 12 personnel groupings. You look at the league-wide trend, you know, in those three wide receiver sets and in that 11 personnel, teams tend to throw the football about 67 to 70% of the time over the last couple of years. While in the 12 personnel in those two tight end sets, it's closer to about 45 to 50% of the time. And, you know, I think this also sort of contributes a little bit to what I've talked about in the past, as well as some of the stats I just mentioned, is that I think it leads to sort of the predictability. And one of the reasons why it's harder to throw out of the 11 personnel as seemingly as it is in the 12 personnel is because defenses kind of know what you're going to do. If you're throwing the ball 70% of the time or close to it, it's, you know, making it easier for defenses to basically, you know, scheme against you and whatnot. And, you know, that's one of the interesting things, and that's part of the whole my whole notion of why I'm so focused on sort of identity and sort of what the Falcons do formationally, because in the past I've talked about the genius of Kyle Shanahan and sort of talked a little bit about Sean McVay in recent months, sort of his genius. But when I say genius, oftentimes when you hear me refer to those guys, I say quote-unquote genius because in a lot of ways, what they're doing, it isn't like it's rocket science or it's like, you know, PhD level scheming in the offense. Like basically one of the arguments that you would make of for what makes them ahead, put those offenses ahead of the curve is that their genius is basically built upon their unpredictability. And I think sometimes unpredictability can be overrated and overstated by fans when they talk about offense as if you're like, the defense has no clue what's coming. Of course, defenses kind of know what's coming. They know based off of formation down a distance what is likely. They're reading their keys and whatnot. They've done their film study. But I think what makes Shanahan and McVay particularly special relative to the rest of the league is that they basically have decided that they can run their entire playbook out of like one or two or whatever formations. That it doesn't matter. Like they're not tipping their hand. They're not giving the defense an edge by tipping their hand about what play is about to come based off of who's on the field, what their personnel grouping is. And that's why I say it's not as if like they're doing something that's just like, oh my God, what are they doing offensively? They're like, it's so exotic and so different and so out there. It's just like, no, they don't tip their hand. It's a pretty basic concept that I think most of you guys understand. And certainly I understand. But like for some reason it's genius in the NFL because no one, at least the majority of teams don't do it. And so that's part of the reason why I'm so focused on this identity issues, because I'm kind of hoping that that's kind of what the Falcons will try to be under Dirk Koetter, you know, and I'm hoping to sort of see that development happen. And if that means that the Falcons utilize more tight ends, then so be it. Like even despite all the benefits I've suggested of why it would be beneficial for the Falcons, I'm not necessarily advocating that that's what the Falcons do. in terms of being more of this two tight end offense. I just want them to basically pick something and say, we're going to be the best version of that team moving forward. It'll be interesting to sort of see, because when you look at the sort of Sarkisian offense, one of the comparisons I would make, one of the criticisms I would make of sort of the Sark era is that it was kind of reminiscent a little bit of, you know, the 2011 Malarkey season, which came after the Falcons had traded up for Julio and got Jacquizz Rodgers and, you know, had all these weapons that seemed to be oriented to the Falcons shifting towards more of a pass-heavy offense, coming off of the heels of that 2010 season where they got the brakes beat off of them by the Packers in the playoff game. But that didn't come to fruition, and you could see sort of the disconnect between what Malarkey, you know, was capable of doing and not necessarily what the Falcons, at least on paper, seemed to be moving in the direction of. And then they brought in Cutter, and he was much more able to sort of implement that. And that's kind of what I'm hoping we'll see a little bit this upcoming season in 2019, with Cutter being a little bit more capable of implementing whatever the Falcons want to do, whether it, being disbalanced offense, being, you know, more two tight ends, more wide receivers, more fullback, whatever it is. But that's kind of what I'm hoping to see a little bit. And if I've been reluctant to be overly optimistic about Cutter, the hire and his addition and what he will do. But if there's one area that I'm hoping that his experience can add is, you know, that he can at least come in and sort of take the reins of the offense in a lot of ways and be like, okay, this is what we're going to do. But one of the questions I do have with it moving forward with this team is, like, I don't think it's just simply Cutter coming in and sort of, you know, steering the ship or whatever. I think Dan Quinn has to sort of take some responsibility here, in large part due to the fact that he still has control of the personnel. And you know, he's got to give Cutter the tools to work with if Cutter's going to be able to utilize those tools. I don't know if I could say this is a doubt I have, but it's a question I have. And because it's late January, we can ask questions that, you know, we won't necessarily know the answers to until we get to September. But I do wonder a little bit if, you know, Dan Quinn's focus on sort of calling the plays on defense is he going to basically be in a position to sort of make the necessary decisions that I think he needs to in terms of choosing this identity and him and Dirk Cutter coming to an accord and saying, like, this is what we're going to be. If he's so focused on, you know, improving the defense, is he going to really provide the support that I think Dirk Cutter needs in that regard? So that's a question I have right now. I guess we'll find out in September. But circling back to the tight end position, you know, it's one of the reasons why, you know, over the last several months, I've sort of been of the mindset, you know, that the Falcons should and could add a young, talented wide receiver or tight end in this draft, certainly more so than maybe a running back. And it's in large part due to the fact, and, you know, I've had a lot of people ask me, like, why do you think the Falcons need a tight end? And, you know, particularly on Twitter, it's hard to explain and sort of what I've been talking about on some of these recent episodes in 280 characters. But in a nutshell, I guess the way I would explain it is, you know, oftentimes people look at the offseason and sort of like what your needs are just basically addressing what your biggest weaknesses are. And that's how you address your needs. And it's like, okay, let's identify what are your biggest weaknesses. But I think sort of if I could sort of explain it another way is some of it is also sort of asking yourself, what do you want your strengths to be? And that's sort of kind of what I'm getting at when I talk all the stuff about identity and tight ends and wide receivers and fullbacks and all this sort of things, where it's like, what do you want your strengths to be? Do you want to be an offense that can basically run their entire playbook out of one formation or two formations? You know, when Cutter was in last calling plays in Tampa Bay in 2017, like, the Bucs ran like 95% of their offense out of either three wide receivers or two tight end sets, three tight end sets. You see that with Philadelphia, like, they run 97% of their offense with multiple wide receivers and multiple tight ends on the field. I'm a little bit envious of that. You know, I think the Falcons trying to be this diverse offense, I think, has sort of held them back a little bit in recent years, because they just necessarily haven't had the play caller that was seemingly capable of maximizing that type of offense. Maybe Cutter is, and if so, then great. But I also sort of want to see this offense streamlined a little bit to try to get maximum efficiency out of their offense, to go back to some of the things I talked about earlier with sort of the quote-unquote genius of guys like Shanahan and McVay. And I'm hoping to see some of that. But if we don't see it, then so be it. As long as, you know, at the end of the day, if they can just get more reliable production out of this offense, I can't complain about it. That's sort of where I come from with the tight end position. All that to say is, like, that's why I can make a case why tight end is a need worthy of the Falcons using, say, a third or fourth round pick on, versus maybe some other positions where everybody's just sort of entirely focused on the offensive line or the defensive line or whatnot, and saying, like, how can you justify that's not a big need, because those areas aren't weaknesses. We have a great wide receiver core. We have a good starting tight end. We don't need to, you know, quote unquote, waste picks on, you know, backups at those positions. And it's like, Yeah, you're right. It's not a weakness of your roster, but it is one of those things that it could be a strength of your roster if you know what you're doing in that regard. So there you have it, guys. We'll be back later this week with our wide receiver breakdown. A lot of Sanu slander coming. I'll actually try to keep it at a minimum. I only got 30 minutes to discuss these things, and I could certainly slander Sanu for 30 minutes. So I'll just try to keep it to 5 minutes. So look forward to that. But, you know, in addition to the Sanu slander, you'll see hear a lot of heaping praise Calvin Ridley and Julio Jones and Marvin Hall and all these sorts of guys coming up later this week. In the meantime, of course, you can provide your feedback on any of the topics I've discussed or ask questions for future Q&A episodes and mailbag episodes coming up. Probably the earliest one will be next week. You know where to do that at. On Twitter, Locked On Falcons. On Facebook, Locked On Falcons. Email address, LockedOnFalcons@mail.com. You can leave a comment at FalcFans.com. And speaking of FalcFans.com, you should be able to go on FalcFans.com today and look at the leftover mailbag question and all the questions that I wasn't able to answer on yesterday's Q&A podcast. There was a question. There was more questions about Brandon Fusco. There was a question about Ed Oliver. There was a question about signing Quan Alexander. There was a question about drafting a fullback in the first round, which was a joke question, but I answered it seriously. So you might want to go check that out. So those are some of the things that you can hit up on FileFans.com as you're listening to this right now. So check that out. And
you are Locked On Falcons, your daily podcast on the Atlanta Falcons, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.